TNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan, asking the questions that matter. Like, did I just watch a video from Jesse Murph, who I didn't know who that was, 10 minutes ago? And have you seen this video? I am Kevin Hagland alongside, oh man, Corey Majors and the famous Alec Medford. We are going to talk about the Rangers, Tyler Guyton, and plenty more in the opening segment. But quick side question, have you guys seen this video?
No, I just heard of this person.
Me too.
I'll watch it on silent during this segment.
Oh,
if that's what you need me to do.
I think I've come across video. Three shocking things in the video.
Live from the Tonight Show? Is that what it is?
No, it's just...
It says 1965. Is that the year? Or is this the song?
That's the song.
All right, well, Kevin, in addition to that, at some point today, I will do the appropriate way for a man to eat a banana. So we'll do that at some point, too.
What? Well, I can't...
In the show today.
All right.
When I'm hungry, I'll do it.
I'm really looking forward to
just
that.
Just go along with this Jesse Murph thing, you know?
Okay.
So that we know. A lot of women make it headlines. That's a positive thing. Because they've asked for more headlines.
Huh.
More coverage is what I'm told,
okay.
Kevin.
And all right.
Pay what they're owed.
What?
And to be paid what they're owed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
From the 9-4... I don't know if this video is directly related to the WNBA negotiations,
right.
But to be fair, I said I didn't know who this was 15 minutes ago, so I can't speak to that for sure. From the 601, glad you boys made it back safe. Thank you very, very much.
You're welcome.
You guys want to start? We got Rangers here. We got Cowboys and Tyler Guyton. What do you want to start with?
Let's start with some Rangers. Get those in last night, Kevin. That was a tough loss last night, late in the evening too, so that was tough as well. I thought things were going to be very, very special.
So let's go to cut number one, and I'm glad you phrased it like that. Go ahead and give me cut number one.
As Newman skies one deep left center field, Langford back at the track of the wall, and this one's out of here. The number nine hitter, Kevin Newman, with his second home run of the year. He got a hanging slider that was center cut, and he deposits it to give the Angels a 2-0 lead.
Now, I know the game didn't turn out the way DeGrom or the Rangers wanted. They ended up losing 6-4, and there's a whole sub-Jock Peterson conversation that we need to have. But the one thing I do really like about Jacob DeGrom is when he doesn't feel like he pitched well, he lets you know straight away. He goes, I might have been quick at times out there on the mound last night, but the slider was just not a good pitch. Tonight, it seemed like a ball out of the hand most of the time, and it was spinning right down the middle. When it's not good, the hitter is pretty much eliminating everything and looking for a fastball, and Taylor Ward got me on the fastball. So the question to go along with this, and then we can break down, like, DeGrom seems to specifically struggle with the Angels, but... Has every DeGrom start become a must-watch for you? And then the same question about Evaldi. Because I know they lost, but like it felt like a must-tune-in moment.
So DeGrom's a unicorn.
Agreed.
Like the best pitcher on the planet. You know, he has stuff that is he throws so hard. Everything about him is just different. And you kind of heard legends of him most of his career.
Right.
And now we're getting, and obviously... You heard legends for the last 2 years because he didn't pitch much for the Rangers.
True.
But then this year, he's stepped up and you're like, I got to see it. But it's like watching a unicorn. It's very rare sighting and I'm so excited that I get to see it. We'll get into last night in just a second
because
there was something interesting I wanted to dive in on. Evaldi is like watching my guy. You know,
he's your blue collar pitcher.
Yeah. It's like watching my dude out there, my buddy, just go out there and dominate. I feel like he's an everyman kind of pitcher. And he goes out there and just says, watch this, guys. I'm gonna work these guys over all night long. And that's how it feels. Last night, I really thought DeGrom, and Mike said it earlier in the game, too. He was like, if they're giving that bottom corner about 2 inches outside, DeGrom's gonna have a special night. Problems happened, and I think there was something specific. But yeah, man, I think both of those pitchers for me, and that's a sell to the Rangers right now. Y'all need to hear that. That is a sell. Everybody loves watching these guys pitch.
Now, tomorrow, Eovaldi will pitch, but from the 4-6-9, I always tell my wife it's DeGrom Day every time he starts. Yesterday, I think she finally hit her breaking point. Now, I wonder if that would have been different if he threw 7 shutout innings. I don't know if that is the case. Yes, or nine. Absolutely. All right, I see what you're doing. And then from the 817, ever since DeGrom came back from his injury, it's been must watch. Alec, do you feel the same way? Because I think I'm with Corey that DeGrom and Eovaldi become must watch, though since the start of the second half of the season, feels like this whole team has been must watch.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to watch the team in general, but even when the offense was really struggling there in the front half of the season, I found myself, it was appointment television for DeGrom for sure. Like, I had to sit. And even if I was like, whenever he leaves the game, I don't have much hope. He's probably going to lose the game, going to take an L, tough luck loser. But I found myself having to actually watch pitch by pitch for him. For Eovaldi, that continued to grow and grow and grow once I remembered, oh yeah, he's still that dude. You know, you get mesmerized by, you know, I know it's kind of like a trigger word in social media and stuff nowadays, but like the aura that Jacob DeGrom has, because it just looks so easy. You kind of forget how good some of the other guys on the team are.
Right.
You know, even Jack Leiter's last start, it felt like he was really in control. It felt like he was really dialed in. And I'm like, huh. It goes back to the segment that we ran the other day. Are we appreciating this pitching staff enough? I'm not as a whole, because I am so starstruck by the two frontline guys. And I mentioned to you off the air yesterday, Patrick Corbin has been almost must watch. But yeah, those two for me, it's become appointment television. With there's a caveat for Eovaldi. If he's coming off an injury, it doesn't feel as must watch because I know, okay, 4 innings. You know, but
yeah, and he needs to kind of get back into groove. Yeah, no, you're dead on right there.
Exactly. But whenever he is in mid-season form, I do find myself saying that guy is tough. That guy is different. And I just don't get that same vibe when I watch the other guys on the other team pitching. You know, there are some other great pitchers that they've faced this season, but the only one I can name off the dome is like Skubal, where I'm like, yeah, I need to watch every pitch he throws. Other than that, it's the two guys on the Rangers.
You know, you ever been in the gym and you're just in your groove? You're kind of bobbing your head, you know, like you're, I'm lifting, I'm feeling great right now. Everybody in the gym could be watching me, and I don't give a F, all right?
Yeah.
Like, you, that feeling, that's what I get when I watch Eovaldi when he's in his groove. I'm kind of bobbing my head a little bit. His pace is like this, and he's just like, let's get back on this rubber and tear somebody up. Kevin, last night, that was a problem for DeGrom. It seemed like he couldn't find his grip on the rubber last night, and it was bothering him all night, and I wonder if that bothered him with his slider. Because every time he threw the slider, he would turn back around and look at the rubber and then go kick it for a little bit. And he was like, Is there clods?
Mud, I don't know what you're going to say.
Mud clumps.
Oh, okay.
In my shoes. Like, it just seemed like he just was uncomfortable. And maybe, Kevin, the Angels have figured out how to mess with him on their home field. And they're like, yeah, screw up the mound and we'll screw up DeGrom.
Look, there is something about DeGrom and the Angels, at least this season, in a couple of starts. His 6.97 ERA against the Angels.
Gross.
Against the rest of baseball, 2.14. This was his first loss since May 26th. In almost 2 months since he lost the game. So
well deserved.
I'm not gonna worry about that whatsoever, but I do love him cutting right to the chase after he broke down the home run that he gave up. All in all, just kind of a terrible night.
Yep. Do you remember, was it Jared Weaver?
Yes.
Jared Weaver, when he would come to Texas, looked like Jacob DeGrom did last night against the Angels, where he was just like, I don't like being here. I'm ready to go home.
Yeah, no, you're right. Now, let's talk about quick hit for the Mavericks. The Mavericks have gone ahead and named their new president, Ethan Kaysen. He was previously, or Kaysen if you're fancy, with the 49ers and the Timberwolves. He'll still report to Rick Welts, who may or may not have helped us get Cooper Flagg. Mostly may. And so just wanted to let you know that. Now, for the Cowboys, I know that you got to turn it on, leave it on. That is a fact. There was about a 2.5 hour period yesterday when I was not toloing because I was recording Jesus podcasts.
You're doing another podcast? You're doing something else?
Just for the church.
Without me?
Well, look, I'm sure I can get you a spot on there.
All right. I guess it's time for me to start a podcast without you.
Okay, well, if it makes any difference.
It's called the Satan Podcast.
This is a, geez, Louise. This is a volunteer gig.
We're going to tempt you.
Oh, my gosh. All right. So my point is, I was not listening to sports information during that time. I was mostly just worried about Corey's competing podcast. And a couple of people text me like, hey, call me when you get a chance. And so I called one of them. And the first thing they go, dude, how concerned are you about Guyton? And I was like, why? What happened? Because I had been out of the loop. And so I learned about this as soon as I got in my car on a phone call. What was the range of emotions for you guys, and could it have compared to Todd Archer, who in the span of 7 minutes went from tweeting, they fear it's an ACL, to he's good. It looks like a bone fracture.
So I had gotten back from the gym, went outside to, dude, while I was gone, nobody took care of the pool. Mm. Not a single person. There was layers of stuff. I was like, what'd y'all do? So I'm cleaning. And then I was like, it's hot out here, 100 degrees. Sit down, look at the phone and see it. And like, Kevin, it had just happened whenever I saw it. And I'm like, oh, holy crap. And Adrienne's like, what's wrong? And she's freaking out thinking that I broke the pool or something, you know? She's like, what's going on? And I was like, oh, ACL injury. But then I saw, was it Brandon Laurie had posted that Brian Broaddus said, it's probably not as bad as people think. And I was like, oh, hold on.
Always there to save the day.
If it's Broaddus saying this, now Todd Archer's a very reliable, like, he's fantastic at what he does. But if Broaddus said it, I was like, okay, he knows people that know.
Yeah.
So
And he knows, too.
And absolutely. And so I was like, all right, let me give a little patience to this. And shortly thereafter, the news came out and I felt a lot better. But 4 to 6 weeks is still a long time. Especially with how much I've been putting on this one specific person needing to be good this year for this team. And last year, Kevin, he missed a lot of time in camp,
right,
which put him behind. And right now, if that's the case, he's going to be behind again when he gets back.
And see, and that's what I think is more troublesome is you can learn as much as you want from a book standpoint or teaching standpoint, but if you're not able to go out there and practice it, that's a different deal. So I'm really glad that you brought this up because people are talking about 4 to 6 weeks and the Cowboys regular season, I believe, starts in 5.5 weeks. So people are debating, like, would he be ready for week one? Will it probably be week three? And that's all fine and well. And that is a relevant conversation to have. But I think what Corey just brought up feels even more important to me is, how are you going to gel with the offensive line when you're not out there with the offensive line? How are you going to thrive? And I know they've had OTAs and mandatory minicamp and everything like that, but how can you continue your on-field education when you can't be on the field?
His continued confidence growth is what we needed.
Yeah.
Because you already have a guy that's kind of beat up from last year, and people are telling him, you've experienced this, people are telling you, hey, man, you're new to this. You know, this is all, you're going to grow. You're going to develop. Just keep putting in that work. They're telling you that. And all you're thinking is, I suck. You know,
right,
I'm terrible.
Right.
I have to. And so you go out there and you put in all this work in the offseason to get better. And then you get back out on the field and something like this puts a delay on it. And now you're starting to get those negative thoughts back in. You got to have positive self-talk, Tyler Guyton. Keep the positive self-talk.
And I'm sure teams go through this as well. But I want to know, do y'all as fans have like an eternal debate in your head about, well, let's just not practice anybody that's going to be one of our starters? Because then, like, theoretically, they wouldn't get hurt. But again, I know that defeats the purpose of how the hell are you going to be ready for the season if no one has actually practiced or anything.
Well,
like that.
I mean, and that's why every year we have the bubble wrap question.
Yes.
Which one do we need to bubble wrap for the rest of camp? And just because we can't let anything happen.
Tyler Smith.
And then Kevin, our next guest, is a lot of people were putting a lot of blame on him.
Oh, man.
For the way he ended yesterday's segment.
Because didn't yesterday, I know he's joking, but didn't
keep an eye on who gets hurt next.
Oh, man.
We went, oh.
All right, coming up next, will Mickey take the blame? for what happened yesterday. We'll talk with him live in Oxnard next on The Fan. KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Right now, let's go to Oxnard to talk with Mickey Spagnola. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen. How's it going?
He's wearing his tank top. That's yes. Awesome. He's doing an amazing job.
I love it.
He's awesome.
Now, Mickey, I don't know if you know what's about to happen, but we're going to play a cut of audio from yesterday, and we need to get you to address this piece of audio from you.
All right.
Thank you very much, good sir. We'll catch up with you again tomorrow.
All right. I'll see who gets hurt today.
And then we all had our heart attack moments with Tyler Guyton. And some people are mad at you, Mickey.
Are you blaming it on me? I jinxed him?
That's right.
I'm not blaming on you, but whenever I looked at Twitter yesterday, the way that I found out about the injury was all the things that me and you were tagged in that said, I blame Mickey for this. And I was like, oh, yeah, he did say that, didn't he? But it turned out
See how I'm on top of things before they even happen.
Man, but now I'm scared that you'll be like, keep an eye out on this person. I'm like, no. Okay,
he wasn't the only one either.
Yeah, and this happens in camps. It's just a reality.
Kalen Carson, hyperextended knee, and we'll see how long he's out.
And that feels like another, like Carson and Guyton, and there's a lot of people on this team that I know fit that bill, but this seems maybe more concerning than your run-of-the-mill injury just because those guys feel like they really need time out there, whether it's Carson just getting reps or it's Guyton like trying to gel with some of his teammates. Does that feel like a fair breakdown of, you don't want anybody to get hurt, but there are certain players I was like, yeah, that guy will figure it out.
Yeah.
But like Guyton and Carson are not on that list.
Guyton needs all the snaps he can get. And, you know, chances are he's out 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you hear that and then you realize, well, it's not even August yet. So August is 4 weeks, right?
Yep.
At some point, you know, you hope he gets back. You know, if it's a bone bruise / fracture, you know, bones usually take 6 weeks to heal. So we'll see where that one goes. But, you know, it was at a position that, you know, you're sitting there going, well, we got to figure out who's the swing tackle. Now you got to figure out who's the starting tackle.
Right.
Of that group of guys that were out there. And, you know, that Nate Thomas had been getting snaps there. Adeniji had been getting snaps at right tackle, and then Steele came back. And Richardson, they've been moving him, Richards, I should say. They've been moving him around all over, left tackle, right tackle, guard. And they may have to kind of, you know, settle them in at one spot now. So, yeah, these injuries are starting to pile. And, you know, it never fails. It's always like one position. And that really
tests your depth.
Yeah, it's like a disease, you know. It just kind of goes there and, you know, and starts dwindling the troops at that spot. You know, and they need all the corners they can get. And that's why they signed Christian Matthews, a guy that had been with Eberflus with the Bears in 2023, but he hadn't been much more after his rookie year as a practice squad guy. But they need bodies.
Yeah.
You know, Diggs, the most he's doing that I've seen is participating in walkthrough practices, so that's a step in the right direction. But he's still, you know, he's still not there. Bland finally got back, so, you know, that was a good thing. But, yeah, the injuries at certain positions just keep piling up.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you something, and I hope this isn't veer too far off, but the curiosity of the journalistic news of injury, because you saw it. It spread around really quickly that Tyler Guyton looked like an ACL, and everyone jumped on that. It was like, he's done, out for the year.
Yep.
But really quickly after that, we got more information, and it looked like, okay, not as bad as we originally thought. And then D'Amico Ryans, I know this is kind of different, but I think it all fits into the same category, was talking about Joe Mixon. And one of the things that he said was, I know a lot of people want to report a lot of things about guys with injuries. My thing is, are you really concerned about our guys, or are you just trying to get something out there? And I wanted to get your general thought about, like, do you wait and make sure you get the injury news
right? Nobody waits.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, because if one person does it, like when that injury took place, and, you know, my official word, well, not official, but the word I got, that it didn't look good. All right. So what do you take out of didn't look good?
Right.
Is it ACL? Is it an MCL? Is it a bone bruise? No one waits for the MRI to come out. Right. And then I started looking online and I saw, like, I want to say four sites that aren't here that were reporting it, right? So
wow.
Here's what happens. You know, one person does it, and everybody goes, well, that's got to be accurate. I'm going to get it too. And then it snowballs. And then when one person finds out, oh, no, maybe it's not an ACL, then everybody reports that. That's the world we live in.
So what?
And you go have ahead. To – I feel sorry for the fan out there. Because they've got to figure out who they trust, like the trusted sites.
Right.
And some of them don't know who's here at training camp and who's not.
Right.
And there are sites out there that just take everything that people do here at camp and then just reprint it on their site. And, you know, and people go, okay, well, I'm following them. They got this news. Well, they're not here.
Yeah.
And you know, it's hard to discern who to trust. And so, unfortunately, it's the world we live in.
And then kind of the other part of that with D'Amico Ryans, do you think that reporters are under any, I don't know, like obligation is the right word, to actually care about the players as opposed to just getting the information out there? Because that's one of the things. He's like, do you really care if Joe Mixon, I mean, is that really their job to care if that, like, for that player's well-being as opposed to reporting the news?
Well, I don't know that you care for the well-being, but you would like to not put something out there that is untrue,
for
right?
Sure.
Or not accurate.
Sure.
And I'm going to give you a perfect example. So 10 training camps ago, 2016, we were on the bus coming to training camp and got in the accident.
Oh, yeah.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, remember that?
Yes.
After we were on the bus to finally get back here, I started looking up how it was reported, right? Nobody was there. We were there, right? TV stations showed up after, about an hour later, hour and a half later. But the first lead I saw in AP was, and this, you know, paraphrasing here, but it said the Dallas Cowboys tour bus on the way to training camp in Oxnard, California, was involved in a fatal crash.
Oh.
There were four people on the bus, and there were four fatalities.
Oh, no.
That's right?
Oh, dear.
They killed us off.
I'm glad you came back from the dead.
Yeah, Kevin's only killed one person with a headline.
That
before,
is so. True. Yeah.
And then the next time they reported it, the next time the second paragraph was the same. First paragraph, second paragraph was, according to Cowboy officials, there were no front office players, cheerleaders on the bus. The only people on the bus were non-essential personnel.
Oh, dang, that hurts. That does hurt.
I said, sorry, if my buddy. Mother was alive, she might have thought I was essential, you know. And then the next time, they at least had my name and the bus driver, Emery, who basically saved our lives, by the way. And, you know, that's another segment for you guys. But and then there was two more people on the bus. One was a videographer, didn't bother to find his name. And the other guy who was in the TV department, but he moonlighted as Rowdy. And they said Rowdy.
Oh, God.
Didn't find his name, right? And I read it to him. I read it to him, and he goes, oh, my gosh. He goes, I'm not a character. I'm a person. I got a name. And I said, look at it this way. If you had passed away, the Cowboys were going to have to get a new mascot because Rowdy was dead.
Pretty much.
Oh, my gosh.
Just a huge star or something, I guess, would be the only
so
option.
That gave me another, you know, kind of idea of what goes on out there reporting stuff. I mean, we were there. We knew what happened, right? But that's how it got reported, the first three paragraphs. So I was glad I got a hold of people that might have cared about me to let them know, hey, we're good. We made it, you know? So that kind of goes to what you were talking about, and it's just kind of funny because it was 10 camps ago, July 24th.
That's wild.
Some things don't leave your memory, by the way.
That makes sense.
Mickey, we were there last week, and you are there this week still. And so I've seen some reports from people that are there that Malik Hooker is looking good. When we saw him last week, he looked really good in this, defense.
He had a hell of a day yesterday.
And, yeah, that's where I'm trying to figure out, like, is he just really comfortable with this Eberflus defense, or – I feel like this Eberflus defense sets up safeties for a lot of success.
Well, most of what he did was tackling.
Instincts, yeah.
He wasn't thumping up. He was thumping down. I mean, he was laying the wood out there. and a couple of them, you were going, oh, that might have been a little bit too, you know, too much physicality, right?
No, guys on the ground.
But they told him we were tackling, we got pads on, and that's what he was doing. And I really hadn't seen that from him before. I don't know if he was trying to make a point or what. But I had, before we got on, I wrote a couple of things down here to remember. And he was one of them. And the other guy, Kevontae Turpin, had a heck of a day. And it wasn't little swing passes or handoffs on jet sweeps. He was catching the ball down the field and crossing patterns, you know, hooks, whatever. I thought he had a really good day because some of the other wide receivers, there's been more drops these first few padded practice than you'd like.
And it feels like Kevontae Turpin, as well as, I guess, the other receivers not named Lamb and Pickens, might find themselves in unique positions with so much focus going on those other two to have relatively open routes plenty of times.
And throw the tight end in there, too.
That's right.
You know, and so, you know, if you have those other two guys that, you know, they're, I don't know what they time in the 40, but they've got speed and they've got deep speed, right? And Pickens had another deep catch on a go route. And then if you put Turpin's speed on the field, you know, coming out of the slot or whatever, because a lot of times they're lining up Lamb in the slot. So it depends on what they're trying to improve. So the other third wide receiver could be an outside guy, Mingo or Tolbert, something like that. And then another guy that's starting to look like get more comfortable is Jaden Blue. He's starting to make some plays. He's starting to play football, right? He's fitting in. And the other day, I lose track of my days. It was Sunday or Monday. Down the field on a deep pass, he makes a one-handed catch on the sideline as he's going to the ground. So put his speed on the field with all those other guys, too.
Right.
Now, if you can get an offensive line that's healthy, can block, you might have something on offense.
Well, the next step to make that happen is for you to just say you'll see us tomorrow.
I'm
going to
just see you tomorrow.
Okay. Right. Look forward to that.
Not
going
to try to be a smartass, right?
There you go. Thank you very much, Mickey. We appreciate it, man.
Bye.
There you go. Mickey Spagnola from DallasCowboys.com. He gets us.
It was a good effort.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, it's time for Baseball Nuggets, where the death of a legend caps a really odd night in baseball. Next on The Fan.
There's a shot deep to left. Kruk back. That ball is gone. Home run for Ryan Sandberg.
Fancy Masterpiece back here on 105.3 The Fan right now, brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement. It's time for Baseball Nuggets. So let's start with that, and then I have some more upbeat or fun stories for you. But Ryan Sandberg, who taught me how to spell names differently, as well as how to be really good at baseball, he died at the age of 65 after a battle with cancer. And it's really interesting. I don't know if you guys feel this way, especially you, Corey, since we're like closer to the same age. He was somebody who I felt like was more popular than maybe players with similar ability because he played on the Cubs. It's kind of like I always thought Dale Murphy was like unstoppable just because you could watch him on TBS, and then the same thing with Sandberg on WGN. And I have a lot of relatives who like this was their favorite player.
Yeah, and I understand the your relatives' part. Maybe that's why I had posters and collected cards of his, because I could turn on the TV after school and watch a game on WGN, right?
Yeah, which is a weird notion now because you can watch like everything you want. But back then, you could watch like your hometown team, a handful of national games, and then always the Cubs and the Braves.
Yeah, you got, it's kind of like my buddy was asking me the other day, he was like, should I get the NFL Sunday ticket? And I was like, I don't know, man. I kind of like the product that I get whenever I have Red Zone, right. So I do get to see everything.
Right.
But I kind of like the games that are given most times. They're all there for me. But you get a la carte now, as opposed to, like you said, then you had options. If you wanted to watch, you could watch every Cubs game that you wanted.
Yes.
Every Braves game that you wanted if you had cable. And
that's a good point.
But yeah, he definitely did become more popular because of that at that time. And I think that's one of the reasons that card companies, not necessarily the printing of their cards, but they would print those posters. He was involved in the Will the Thrill poster set, you know, that group of posters that I love so much. Yeah. And so he definitely was very popular because of that at that time.
From the 210, my first baseball love was the Cubbies, thanks to WGN and Wrigley Day Games. Yeah, that's another thing if we're really throwing people off. Wrigley Field didn't have lights until like the end of the 80s.
Oh, they have lights now?
Yeah. Yeah, Corey, they did.
That's right, because the game where the guy,
Bartman.
Yeah, Bartman game, that was a night game.
So all of their home games used to be during the day, and this person was like Mark Grace, Sammy Sosa. Like,
yes, Mark Grace.
Mark Grace is a great example of, like,
he was the
like,
best power-hitting first baseman I'd ever seen, because he was the only one not Pete O'Brien.
And if you were from that time, you're like, oh my God, love Mark Grace. If you look back on it, you might be like, oh yeah, he was good.
He was good.
And then you like just move on with your life and never think about it again.
From the 903, as a Cards fan, I loved and feared Sandberg. Always did the thing that hurt us most. Class act, gone too soon.
Yeah, he was the MVP in that 84 season, and that 84 Cubs team really should have won the NLCS. I believe they lost to the Padres, and then the Padres went on to lose to the Tigers. But remember, like, what a huge deal it was not that long ago that the Cubs won the World Series. Ryan Sandberg almost had them in a position to do that like 30 years before that. All right, so that is the disappointing, the bummer of it all. I do have some more, I don't know, weird, upbeat stories. Corey, don't look at the sheet. Would you rather hear cut 6 or cut 7?
6-7, right? Am I right? Let's go with 6.
Do you know why 6 was afraid of 7?
I don't want to hear your answer. I've heard your answer on this one before.
Because 7 was a registered 6 offender. All right. Go ahead. I forgot what number he said. Whatever number he said, Alec, give me that one.
Is that a drone? I don't know. But look at that. Oh.
And then he made the mistake of opening his shirt. And take that. Said, thank you very much.
Yeah, take that ball. Oh, he's going for 2.
And he's going to be in there.
So,
he got stung by a bee?
He got stung by a bee. I almost didn't want to do this story because this is my worst nightmare.
He made the mistake of opening up his shirt. I don't understand. Can you tell me what happened?
Mikel Garcia, it looked like there was like a bee bothering him. This bee was freaking enormous too. And then so he was just kind of like, you know, you move your shirt. But when he moved his jersey, I think the top button was undone and it kind of opened up some more room. And so then the giant bee flew in there. You see him kind of step away and he gets stung. And the hit, it is a run-of-the-mill single to center. And he is hauling ass the entire way and makes it into a double. Just because of, I wonder that quite a bit, faster players, if you have like a lackadaisical fielding center fielder or whatever, that maybe you could get more doubles out of it. It's terrifying to
me. And yes, there was a time when we were at Jose Mesa's place in Mesa, Arizona. And there was a bee attack out there, and we were like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. But yeah, bees get after baseball players a lot, Kevin.
Not at
Globe Life, though.
That's true. But anytime I see there's like a game delayed because of bees and wasps, I would just tell the manager I'm out. I'd be like,
might as well end the season.
Yeah. If we play a doubleheader tomorrow, I'll be there for the whole thing or whatever, but I'm not doing this. Now, this next
one. That was good audio, though.
Okay. This one's a little trickier because this is an audio medium, but this is from the Orioles and Blue Jays. Now, I think the issue is the way the catcher was set up, and the catcher kind of throws his glove out to the left side towards the batter, which might have thrown the umpire off. But if you watch, like, I always call it the Fox box. If you watch that, this pitch right here, cut number 7, is right down the middle.
Wait a minute.
What is going on at home plate? Brian Walsh, man.
That's literally right down the middle.
I mean, you couldn't set it on a tee in the heart of the plate any better than that. Look at this pitch right here. How do you miss that?
Dude.
And it... Again, I think it was because where the catcher was set up and how it got framed. But if you look at the box, which is not like immediately in front of the umpire right there, it is almost dead square in the middle.
Yeah, that's whenever this happens, it's a question of two things. One, was the umpire looking at something else? Two,
do you think he saw a bee?
Does the umpire hate the pitcher?
Oh.
Three, does the umpire hate the catcher? Because that could be a possibility, too. Maybe that catcher's talked too much smack, and he's like, I'll show you. Four, umpire's got to go. I hate that part of it whenever it's something that clear, like that in your face.
Yeah.
And I do love their reaction, though.
Oh, yeah. Kidding me? And they name check him?
They should have gone downstairs and had an interview with him right then.
But also, you know what? I would love...
Why'd you call that a ball?
Yeah. Oh, so can you play the beginning one more time? It also sounds like this is not the first complaint, but an ongoing complaint that they've had against him.
Wait a minute.
What is going on at home plate? Brian Walsh.
And it like, so it just kind of sounds
what is
like,
going
yeah.
on? Like, this is the, yeah. yeah.
This is the third issue that we've had of the day. All right. Couple more quick things. Scary moment yesterday. Eugenio Suarez, the all-star who obviously has been part of a lot of hypothetical trade discussions. He got hit on the hand by a 96 mile per hour pitch.
Oh.
However, x-rays were negative. I like what Suarez said. He said, look, good news is x-rays are negative, but it still obviously hurt. I just love, like, that's a human response to me.
Yes, because how many times have you been like, look, it hurts. And they're like, but there's nothing wrong. And yeah. you're like, doesn't mean it doesn't hurt, okay?
I always think a team doctor or a team spokesperson does a player wrong when they go, it'll really come down to their pain tolerance. And I'm like, man.
It's true, right? Like, all of us have different pain tolerances.
Kind of made that guy sound like a chump if he doesn't go out there.
Yeah, it does.
And then also, did you see that the Red Sox had a lot of issues on their flight to Minnesota. Alex Cora, their manager, said he was fine because he fell asleep. But it was really turbulent, and a lot of players were still reeling from motion sickness after the flight and everything like that. Obviously, that seems like that could translate poorly to the baseball field.
You ever had motion sickness?
I don't think so.
Alex, have you ever had motion sickness in your life?
No, don't think so.
Me either, but I know Avery did, my son, at
Jess
one point.
Gets it, too.
Some other people I've known. I've never had it, though. And somebody did say that I might be onto something. Interview the players and the managers in between innings. What if reporters go and interview umpires between innings?
See? I would appreciate that. And do you think motion sickness was the cause for the Red Sox? They were ahead 4-3 going into the bottom of the ninth. And then they lost 5-4. Could it have been because of motion sickness?
Could have been crap bullpen.
Or maybe they had that same stupid ref or ump went over to that game.
Exactly.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, more Cowboys questions that matter next right here on The Fan.